Pop Dove. We might say the meanest things. Pop Dove. Sometimes we're not much company. There's no rearranging. Our writing remains the same. We remain the same. And as far as we're concerned, Pop Dove. You belong to us. Pop Dove.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dave Lifton, and welcome to episode 19 of the Pop Dove's podcast, where for today only, we have made a solemn vow to go an entire episode without making a single reference to Billy Joel. And now that we've already broken that promise, please welcome a big shot and an uptown girl, Jeff Giles and Jason Hare. Gentlemen.
Sup, fuckers?
Sup, fuckers?
Beat you to it this month, motherfucker.
And as all of our regular listeners know, here on the Pop Dove's podcast, we give a lot of love to mothers. But we don't talk as much about our fathers, and June is, after all, the month of Father's Day. So even though we're a little late with this, we wanted to dedicate an episode to our dads and thought that the best way to do that would be to have as many of them as possible as our guests. Unfortunately, neither my dad nor Jeff's could make it today because they are no longer alive. So we are proud and pleased to welcome Jason's dad, Gary Hare. Welcome to the Pop Dove's podcast.
Thank you. Where are those people? Oh,
we're filming for a live studio audience.
I already broke something.
Okay. Cable popped out just
as we started talking.
Did he just call me a mother? I just met this guy.
He called you a motherfucker.
I would never. I would never say that shit. I would never say that on the radio because it's fucking impolite.
Well, Jason, as far as you're concerned, your dad is a motherfucker.
That is actually true.
Not recently.
What was that comedian who said that my mother never saw the irony when she called me a son of a bitch?
I have no idea. Who was that?
I don't remember.
My dad always told me that the best part of me ran down his leg.
Left leg. Left leg.
Oh, sorry. Left leg.
My best friend's mother said, used to tell him that she should have blown her husband that night.
Yeah, I've heard that one too. You're
I think we're the same mother.
So let me get this straight. I got on this podcast because your parents, your fathers, are no longer with us.
That's right. You win.
That is such a lousy excuse on their part. They could have been here if they wanted to.
Yeah. You're on by
trying a little harder.
You won by default.
Default. Yeah. That's it.
We couldn't afford the Skype costs.
Well, I my father is here in spirit in the form of my crankiness. Aruba, Jamaica. All right, so Gary, I have a question. I have a couple of questions for you.
Go.
The first one is knowing how Jason turned out, is he merely an embarrassment or a disappointment?
Oh wow, that's a really good question. He was really never a disappointment. An embarrassment, constantly. You never want to go into a public restroom. With Jason or his brother Ryan standing to the left or right of you at the urinal.
He's sneaking peeks? How do you sneak a peek at your dad, Jason?
It's by squinting.
You know, when they take out the magnifying glasses, it's going a little bit over the edge. But you'll stand, first of all, they always let me go in first. And I say, you guys got to go? And they go, no, we don't have to go. And then I'm standing there, and there's strangers, and they wait until both sides of me, either side of me is vacant. And then they'll go to the bathroom, and then one will lean over and go, that is the smallest thing I have ever seen. And then the other will lean over and go, you're absolutely right. How do you pee with that thing? And then right away, everything just shuts down, and I have to leave.
And the other thing I'll do is I'll stand next to him, and I'll just wait until it's quiet. Because, you know, it's quiet, like those rest stop bathrooms. I'll just go, oh. So I guess an embarrassment is the answer.
But I was always proud of Jason.
Aw. You don't have to say that just because.
Well, even when that 11-year-old girl pressed charges, I was proud of you. I'm making that up.
You want to quickly tell them about the time that my my girlfriend in high school said I was gay?
Oh, this is spontaneous. Jason's girlfriend, as he said, spread the rumor that he was gay.
After we broke up. Apparently she told some people that I was gay, which made no sense.
Well, I don't know if it made no sense. I mean, but the point was is that Jason and all his friends were congregated in front of our front door, and they were talking loudly. It was the springtime, and the phone happened to ring. So I answered the phone, and I slid open the window, and I yelled down to Jason. I go, "Jason, it's for you." And he calls. He says, "Who is it?" I said, "It's Greg." And he says, "Greg who?" I said, "Greg Louganis. He wants to know if you can come and play today."
Yeah.
My second question is, who would you say you used as a role model, Joe Jackson or Murray Wilson?
Who is Murray Wilson? I have an Uncle Murray. Who is Murray
Wilson? It's not your Uncle Murray.
Oh, it's Uncle Murray on Seinfeld?
Murray Wilson was the was Brian Wilson and Carl and Dennis Wilson's father in the Beach Boys.
Oh, I didn't know that they were
notoriously abusive to his kids.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What was my first choice?
Or Joe Jackson, Michael Jackson's father.
Oh, I would never be. Abusive. I would never be Joe Jackson because there's no way I can make money off of Jason. You know, I could never profit from anything Jason's done. Because Jason has proudly never earned an income.
You mean he's not giving you a cut off of his evil Prince Ludwig and Acoustic 80s shows?
All I do is show up, and I make comments, and I'm told that I don't know anything, and I shouldn't say a thing. Because my musical taste does not jibe with what they play.
See, wait, this is shocking, because apparently my dad is alive.
Well, here's the thing. I think as my dad gets older, you seem to like gravitate now towards like contemporary country radio. This is because he has satellite radio now, and he does these long trips, like 5 hours upstate, 5 hours back within a couple of days. So like all you do is listen to satellite radio, right?
Well, of course, I finally found out what a satellite was.
Right. Well,
and then
go.
It works like all the time. I always like music where I could understand the words. If I don't understand the words, I don't want to have to read an album jacket to understand what the song is about.
Gotcha. So he's not a liner note person.
Is that what that's called?
I think so.
That or he's not a reading person.
Right, right. Do you know how to read?
I read. Once.
Okay. Fair enough.
I just want to know which comes first. Which came first? The alphabet or that song? You know, A, B, C.
They created the alphabet to fit the song.
That's what I thought. That was my impression as well.
Because it was originally written by Mozart.
No kidding.
Yeah, Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, Baa Baa Black Sheep, the alphabet song. It's all the same melody.
Holy
it's
crap.
It's all based on Mozart.
I thought that was Billy Joel. Oh, we can't mention Billy Joel.
Twice.
Yeah. Hi, Ted.
Ted is our friend who he hates it whenever we mention Billy Joel.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sure you have a third question.
Nope, I only had those two.
This, for 3 weeks, this is what you came up with, was two questions?
Goodbye, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Pop Goes Podcast.
Dave's a deliberate worker.
I try to tread the line between reverent and irreverent and respectful.
You do?
Well, when it comes to, like, my elders, and because there aren't too many of them anymore.
Yeah, you don't need to hurry up.
Hey, listen, we were out to dinner the other night, and we were talking about age because my wife and I hang out with the younger people. For some reason, they gravitate towards us.
They're swingers.
And no, the reason we hang out with them is they could be possible organ donors. So we really want to get on their list. And I said, you know, I'm approaching 63. And my wife stopped me in mid-sentence and said, "You're 64. And I stood up at the table indignantly and said, "Holy shit, who put that extra year on when I wasn't looking?" Because I hate celebrating birthdays.
I think that happens as you get older. Like, I know now it's hard for me to remember whether I'm 33 or 34 years old. Like, I tend to not remember the age that I am.
Oh, fuck you.
I was going to say, "Oh, Dave, remember when you were 34?
Nope.
Gee, and what I missed the most about Jason growing up was when he used to get angry, he used to run to his room and slam the door. And I would yell, "Don't slam that door." And then he'd open it. and then he'd slam it again. So he went to school one day, and he came home, and I purposely provoked him. And he went upstairs to slam the door, and he couldn't slam the door because I took the door off the hinges. And then I could negotiate. If he did certain things, I would give him the door back.
You should have cut it up so you could. He had to earn it back in pieces.
Well, you know what? If he was half the ass he was, I would have given him a Dutch door, and he would have only got the top, but not the bottom.
When I was 14, I got a phone. I convinced him to put a phone line in my room, and apparently, I abused the privilege. So he took the phone out, and he's ripping out the phone line. It's done. And so for 3 years, whenever I had to make a phone call, I had to go down to the kitchen, whatever. Finally, when I was 18, and this was back when AOL had just kind of become the thing, and I needed an internet connection for school and stuff. And I go, "Can I please have the phone line back? You know, it's been all these years, whatever." And he just goes into a section of my room. He removes a bunch of books that were hiding the phone jack. Just plugs in and he goes, "Here you go," and walks out.
You big dummy.
Jason was never technical, nor the sharpest knife in the drawer.
And he didn't read. If he had picked up a book, he might have seen that the jack was there.
He was a picnic. That's right. He was a picnic basket with half a sandwich. I mean, that was really it.
Fun fact: when I was a kid, I was in the most advanced reading group until I was about 9, and then everybody caught up, and then they passed me.
Jason went from the Bluebirds.
What's the Bluebirds?
The Bluebird. Remember in elementary school, the fast people were the Bluebirds. And the slow people reading group was the Turtles. And, of course, no one figured that the kids couldn't figure this shit out.
I don't remember that.
Oh, I remember that because you had the little bluebird thing stuck on your sticker, on your reading book there. Oh. So you were a bluebird. So when the other kids caught up with you.
You're a bluebird.
You went from a bluebird to the short bus. How do you guys decide what music genre is up for discussion and what's good music and what's not so good music?
A good song is good music. A bad song is bad music. I don't care about genre at all.
Really?
Yep. I don't care if it's jazz or country. I can quote Sondheim as if he was a relative of mine.
Oh, he certainly can. Don't get him started, please.
Yeah. Anything from Sondheim to punk to Sinatra to Duke Ellington, I don't care. If it strikes me emotionally in some way, in a positive way, then I like it. And if it strikes me negatively, then I don't like it. It's as simple as that.
Dave, how do you feel about Starland Vocal Band?
Because we had talked about this a couple of years ago when we did the Guilty Pleasures episode that first time. I've seen especially in Lee Guterman's book, the 100 worst rock songs that we mention all the time here, that was mentioned as one of the worst songs of all time, and like the nadir of 70s mellow rock. And it's not. It's just a pleasant little, nice little tune, and that's all it is. And it's well performed, and it's innocuous. It's too innocuous to really be. To reach that awful status that it has.
I think Afternoon Delight has just become the de facto punching bag for 70s mellow music.
Right.
Your mother and I used to love Afternoon Delights, but then we started to nod off. it became bedtime, Afternoon Delight. Well, you know when
you know what's even more amazing about that? That song came out after Jason was born.
No, it didn't. That was 76.
76? Oh.
76. I was 77.
Is it possible that song is responsible for Jason being born?
No, the back seat is responsible for Jason being born.
This is a funny story. A few years ago, I was thinking that I was born a little early. And I started thinking about...
You were born a lot early, Dave.
I was premature. I was 3 weeks early. And I started thinking about like when my birthday would be if I hadn't been born. And then I wound up, just for the sake of it, just for the hell of it, backdating 9 months. And I freaked out for a second because it almost, I missed it by a month, coinciding with my parents' anniversary, like to the day. Hmm. But no, it turned out that the anniversary was a month. That
I thought you were going to say that it coincided with Lincoln's assassination. really messed up.
Well, you know, Marin and I are married, I think, 35 years, Jason?
Why are you asking me?
How old are you?
You guys are married in 74.
Really? I didn't remember that. Anyway,
more than 35 years now.
We're married 34 years, something like that.
No, more than that.
More than 37?
37.
Is there a dartboard? Can I take it? And
is there going to be a quiz on this?
And six of those are happy years that I can recall. If you if you kind of take fractions, I think. And the funny thing about weddings and anniversaries, those are your special nights. You know, you get that same gift on those holidays and stuff like that. But when you get past 20 years, it becomes a very stale gift. You know, it's like, wait, I got this last year, and it still fits. You know, so. I got the dog excited.
Even the dog is howling at these Catskills jokes.
Jason, something about you being at Woodstock.
I was probably the only person who went to Woodstock and left. I bailed.
What is this shit?
You know, all these people with these sharing a cigarette. Can't anybody afford a cigarette these days? passing around a little piece of shitty cigarette, you know.
The cigarette.
I was coming down from college in my Volkswagen bus with painted rabbits on the side. And I picked up these hitchhikers from Montreal, and they said they were going to a music festival. And I was coming down from Plattsburgh, New York, because I went to college in Plattsburgh, and I'm very, very proud of that. So, because that was the only school that accepted me, I was very proud. So they told me about this music festival, so I drove them to Woodstock, and it was very early in the start of the festival, so there wasn't a lot of people there, but you could see it was getting packed.
So you didn't get like stuck in traffic or anything?
Not in the very beginning. You know, I used to leave to go home at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And this was early. So I went there and they said, oh, why don't you stay and this and that? And there's all this stuff going on. And as the people started to fill in, I realized that this was going to be outrageous and it was time for me to get the hell out of there. So I was there and I left. And it's kind of like the Vietnamese War. You kind of regret you weren't there just for the experience. But that was it. So I was never in the right place at the right time.
Well, you weren't really into that music anyway.
Sean Anna played there.
Oh, I remember Sean and I used to watch them on TV.
good call, Jeff.
Yeah.
So you didn't see anybody play?
No, I didn't see. Well,
you drove past.
I was in. I stayed 10 hours, and then I was out of there.
You did not stay there 10 hours.
It was like, first of all, it took you like 2 hours to get into it.
Uh-huh.
And then I set up, and I sat with them, and, you know, all this stuff, and they were meeting people.
Did you see any bands play?
I did. The festival didn't even start yet.
Oh, okay.
It was like days before the festival, like maybe 2 days before the festival started, and everybody was coming in. I just wanted out of there because I don't like crowds.
This story is suspect.
I think maybe it seemed like 10 hours after the cigarette was shared.
Well, yeah. Yeah, that was it. Well, I didn't inhale because I didn't want to stop my growth. So
we should try to get your dad press passes for Bonnaroo, Jason.
What's Bonnaroo?
Better yet, Burning Man.
Burning Man. Dad, you've had Burning Man. You've had that after Mexican food, you have Burning Man.
I was going to say my hemorrhoids are Burning Man, let me tell you.
Try the veal. Bonnaroo is like it's a festival. It's a music festival.
Where does it take place?
Tennessee.
Oh, Tennessee. Oh,
was it 3 days?
Yeah.
Do you know what you have if you have 32 people in Tennessee all in one place?
Oh boy.
A full set of teeth.
There you go.
See, but Burning Man, as I understand it, has become very Middle America. It's not. You know, you get dentists and doctors going there, and lawyers looking for clients. But it's not totally radical, I don't think, like Woodstock was. I could be wrong.
But it's still an opportunity for people to go out in the field and get really, really stoned.
Oh, yeah, but people do that after church every day, so, you know, it's not a big deal.
This broadcast is probably endorsed by 5-time Grammy Award winner Michael McDonald. Oh,
have you ever critiqued a song, an album, a performer, and they somehow got word of what you said?
Jason had it fairly recently, actually.
And they come to your house and they kill your goldfish or something?
I had, you mean on the podcast or just like in general?
Well, let's start with the podcast. Because out of 10 people, someone's got to be upset.
The podcast, no, because we just kind of riff on things. We don't, we could be make fun of like some acts we don't like and stuff like that. But I don't think it's that big. On the site, on the blog, every once in a while, especially with Jason, has a habit of, in his irreverence, and he'll explain this, what happened, will say something that offends somebody, and it gets through to the people. So, Jason, you want to tell the story of
you offended somebody?
Of Greg Guidry?
Yeah.
But you offended Benny Mardones before that, right? Didn't he call you fat or something like that?
Yes, he did, because I believe he was looking at a picture on my website of Michael McDonald and thought it was me. I don't think he knows who Michael McDonald is. In one of my series, I covered this song called "Going Down" by an artist named Greg Guidry, who you've never heard of because he only had one hit.
I just love the title.
I was waiting for that.
right. Anyway,
look, so at my height, it's going up.
I made fun of him. I made fun of the song. And then as I was writing the piece, I found out that he had died. He had apparently committed suicide. What did he do? He lit his car on fire or something?
I think the words flaming wreckage were used.
Yeah. And I didn't make...
Because of what you wrote?
What?
Committed suicide because of what you wrote?
No. And so I didn't make fun of that, but when I had been writing this piece making fun of the song, which I believe is my right to do, whether someone is alive or dead. If you're going to make fun of a song, you're going to, you know, you judge that on its own merits. And I think I wrote something like, when I found out that he had committed suicide, I wrote something like, ooh, did it suddenly get uncomfortable in here? And that was all, I think that was all I pretty much said about
it.
Yeah, that was it.
Well, his family found it. His family found the post. Somebody must have posted it to Facebook. And then that started a whole line of everybody that knew his son started writing on the website, yelling at me for being an asshole and insensitive and things like that.
I'll leave it to you to pick on a dead guy who can't fight back.
Well, the thing is I wasn't – I mean, what I felt I was picking on him for was his song, which had nothing to do with him being alive or dead. But they really came down on me. They really – and I felt bad. I generally – I don't know. Most of the time I don't feel bad because I feel like, well, I'm judging the song. I'm not judging the person. But I guess by me saying, did it get uncomfortable in here, I don't know.
So these people...
It could be interpreted as being a bit glib.
I think it was his son who found it. And you ended up kind of making friends with his son, but it was the guy's
wife.
It was his widow.
Widow who was being a real obnoxious.
She was a lunatic, yeah.
So these people are still upset?
Well, I'm
going to go downstairs to the living room.
I'm pretty sure they've forgotten it by now, or they're not thinking about it. Yeah. But for a while, his widow was posting mean comments, and then she was going back and finding other posts of mine. Like she somehow got back to my website. I think she commented on the video of Jessica and I singing. There's a video of Jessica and I singing on my website, and I think she commented something like, "Oh no, it was an acoustic '80s video," and she's like, "You'll never make it. You're terrible." You know?
So she was stirring the pot of viciousness?
Yeah, she just wanted to try and
get... She's just like Aunt Mary.
Oh. Stop. Well, Aunt Mary will never hear this. So okay,
we're going to repost the Greg Guidry post tomorrow.
Yeah, great.
See if we can start this all up again.
Great.
Well, the son, as I remember, was like, yeah, you know, this is kind of insensitive, but I also like to think that Dad would have found this funny.
Yes, and that
was pretty cool.
Yeah, that made me feel... better about what I did, but I still felt bad because I said, okay, I defend what I wrote about the song, but if I offended you by my insensitivity to your father's death, because that's a terrible way for anybody to die, and to have a kid that knows that that's the way that you died, or I mean that's terrible. So I remember, Jeff, you were like, don't apologize.
Mm-hmm. Now, does anybody ever contacted you because of something favorable you said who you'd never expect to hear from?
I don't know. You guys can tell stories about that.
Well, there's Jeff with Mrs. Fogelberg.
Yeah, Mrs. Fogelfuck. She was very cool.
Oh, Dan Fogelberg?
Yeah, you used to love Dan Fogelberg.
Oh, I thought he was great.
You loved that album, Windows and Walls.
Was that what I liked?
Yeah.
I don't know the name of the album. I just know the songs.
Yeah.
I used to listen to.
Anyway, go ahead, Jeff.
He's dead. And his widow... Well, he left behind tapes.
Well, there was also the Melomus that you... The Melomus in 2007, you did his the Christmas song, and then like a couple of days later, he died.
And then he died. Is that how it happened, or did we do...
Jeff did that?
No, Jeff killed him? Jeff killed him, yeah. Jeff killed him.
After listening to a couple Fogelberg Christmas songs, I think I wanted to.
Yeah,
he decided December 16th, 2007.
But we also covered... he has an actual Christmas album, and we covered a track from that.
Right, and that was December 8th, 2007.
Wow.
This is Google here, so.
Nice. Oh, I was impressed until he said that.
Yeah. So you gave him his last bad review of his life.
Jeff did that?
Probably.
Jeff and I both.
Wow.
But anyway.
So then a couple years later, his last album came out. He had recorded it knowing that he was terminal and I think put the tapes in a safe deposit box or something dramatic like that. And I have a series called You Again where I talk about new music from artists who aren't supposed to have any. You know, bands that are washed up or that haven't been around in a while. And when the Fogelberg record came out, I knew that it fit the exact description of what the series was supposed to be about. So I went to Dave and Jason and I said, I got to do this. What do you think? And Jason freaked out and told me under no circumstances should I write about this record. And then I went and I did it anyway.
Well, I said, I think you can do it. If anybody could do it properly, it would be you.
And I said, and even you answer. Can't do that. No, I think I read what I think. Had I read some of what you had written?
No, I think I just told you. I don't even think I had listened to it when I got in touch with you.
Was it that bad?
No. It was actually not that bad at all, but a bunch of people still got mad at me for not being positive enough, and there were a bunch of really negative comments, and then his wife chimed in and said some very kind things, so that was nice.
The thing that she said was that, you know, I understand that, you know, that, that this review means a lot to me because you put aside all your previous prejudices and just listened to the music. And reacted, you know, and judged it on its merits, and without, you know, the baggage of whatever Jeff had thought about his previous career.
So she
was very, 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 very nice of her.
Now, did she read Pop Dose on her own, or someone steered her to it?
I'm guessing someone steered her to it.
Yeah.
Now, did you ever say anything positive about someone who's alive? Since we're all talking about dead people. I mean, I don't want to drag
this
up.
This just happened.
Parents.
I don't know if I told you guys that this happened with Kip Winger. Did you guys?
No,
did
I didn't
talk
know
about
this.
No.
Kip Winger is.
I do know this. Yeah.
Hold on, time out. I gotta explain to my dad who.
Jason
Kip
talks to me like I'm a foreigner, and if he speaks slowly enough and loud enough, right. I will understand the language.
Kip Winger was in a metal band in the '80s called Winger.
But there's a connection that your dad will know because he played bass for Alice Cooper, didn't he?
I never liked Alice Cooper.
Well, neither did I, but there's a name that you'll know.
I never liked Alice Cooper. I never liked the Stones because I found him awkward to look at when he was singing. And I thought he should be on like a fundraiser for some disease, Mick Jagger, you know, because it always looked like he had every affliction going. But I didn't know there was a band named Winger. And Jason's on my case constantly about a band that I recall called The Rats. Jason said there was never a band called The Rats.
They were the Good Rats.
Boomtown Rats.
Yeah. Boomtown Rats. I don't think he's thinking of either of those bands.
It was just The Rats. I remember that.
Maybe he's thinking of Rat. Yeah.
that's another
metal band.
A band called Steven Rat.
Pearson. Are you sure you're not thinking of...
With two T's, Rat with two T's.
Are you sure you're not?
Milton Berle was in their first video. Maybe that's why.
Well, his nephew was in the band, or was their manager, or something like
that. My father ran track with Milton Berle at Monroe High School, and my sister, whose name is Hedda Hare, that's a real name, Hedda Hare.
Let's mourn for that. Let's take a second and mourn for that one.
my sister went to Milton Berle's daughter's birthday party. So
the stories about him true?
You know something? Howard Stern spoke to him on the air about that.
I remember that.
And he really did. He never denied that he was hung like a horse.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that was true or not. And I don't know what happened at the birthday party either.
We'll have to ask Ann Hedda about that.
That's true.
Anyway, so Winger was a metal band. And Kip Winger is the lead singer.
Okay, and you said something nice about him?
Well, Jeff's about to tell us.
One of our columnists wrote a feature at one point suggesting, very obviously tongue-in-cheek, that one of his big hits was written by his penis. That he nicknamed Lil Kip. And he wrote this long, in-depth history of how the song was written by Kip Winger's dick. So I got in touch with Kip Winger's publicist for another reason. I wanted to interview him for something else, and I was told that because we had written slanderous things about Kip Winger, that he wouldn't talk to us. And I said, wait, what are you talking about? Because I really wasn't sure. And then I went into the site archives, and I found, I think, three articles that mention him at all, and the only one that was even sort of vaguely insulting was that one. So I went on Twitter and kind of shared the news that...
Back up. Twitter is a site... Oh. Sorry, go ahead.
It's past tense.
It's great that Jason can actually do that to somebody instead of me doing it to him.
I got unplugged here. When I heard Twitter, and now there's Skype...
That's we're using Skype right now.
When I heard Twitter, and when I'm thinking of what the past tense of Twitter is, that I twatted. I have no clue whatever. I'm not hearing anything.
They're not talking.
Oh, okay.
Your jokes are being met with silence. That's the problem.
I could imagine talking to an old girlfriend saying, "I'm going to twat you." I mean, you know, that right away could get you arrested.
Those boos.
So what is Skype?
Skype is the service that we use to do calling over the internet.
That's how we're talking to each other right now, is through Skype. It's like an online internet calling system for both audio and video. So the reason we're able to talk right now is through Skype.
All that stuff in that little tiny cable is going on.
It is. There's little men in the cable
running back and forth with little signs, yes, and what people are writing.
Exactly.
Like post-its. Running back and forth with post-its.
All right. So he knows what Twitter is, apparently. So I'm sorry, Jeff. Got off track there. Please continue.
Well, anyway, I told everybody that Kip Winger's publicist had accused us of slandering him, and I said, I think the article she's talking about is this one. And then she wrote back to me and she said, it was the article that you mentioned on Twitter. So not only was she aware of what we had written about Kip Winger at some point in the past, I think this article ran, I don't know, 9 months, a year ago. But she was also following me on Twitter.
Huh.
Somehow that I wasn't aware of. But anyway, it has a happy ending because I wrote back and I said, I hope you can see that was not really a serious article. And nobody really thinks that Headed for a Heartbreak was written by Kip Winger's dick. and I think now we're gonna interview him.
But, you know, see, as far as I'm concerned, that's like a compliment. Because, I mean, he was doing right. Hair metal.
Even his dick
rock.
Is talented.
No, but I mean, the idea that, like, his music was all about sex and fucking and all that. So why not have a song that's written by your dick?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's what Rob was getting at with that. And, you know, why I would love to have somebody say, hey, his dick wrote this song.
instead
of his heart or his brain or something.
Unless you have a disease and it stutters or something like that.
That does happen to me a lot, actually.
What I want to know, Jeff, is so when you interview Kip Winger, will you mention this?
I might.
Because I'd love to know. I mean, there is the possibility, right, that he doesn't even know about it.
Sure.
I mean, it could be a possibility that, like, his publicist is just looking out for him and didn't even bother telling him about this. But I don't know. Have you read other stuff by Kip Winger? Does he have a sense of humor, does it seem?
Dude wore a tutu in a video. He's got to have a sense of humor.
I say go for it. I mean, maybe keep it at the end. Maybe wait until the end of your interview.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Jason will never say anything negative about Richard Marx or Lionel Richie because his mother will kill him.
Is that why?
I no, that's not true. I love Richard Marx and Lionel Richie on their own merits, of which they have many.
He would never say anything bad about Air Supply because of the...
Oh, Air Supply. Jason, when Jason was young, his mother took him to a concert.
That was my first concert.
Yes, and they were going up and down the aisles, like, touching people. And Jason didn't get it through his head that you don't reach out to touch men if you're another, if you're a young boy, you know? And they walked past him. And according to his mother, Jason was heartbroken.
I was. No, I wrote about that on Pop-Tart.
I think he's still heartbroken.
I am still heartbroken. I was... That day, I was headed for a heartbreak.
That day could have been your sexual awakening.
With Russell Hitchcock.
Then you could have interviewed the band Sticky Fingers. Wasn't there a band Sticky Fingers?
That's an album by the Rolling Stones.
Oh, is that what that is?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
That was Jason, I'm impressed.
That was the one with the zipper in the front.
That's right. Yes, that was the one with zipper in front, designed by Andy Warhol. Yeah.
Oh, he did that? I had no idea.
Yeah, and that's not. And contrary to belief, that is not Mick on the cover.
That's Dave Lifton.
That's right.
That is definitely not Dave Lifton. I haven't even met Dave Lifton, I will say with all certainty that is not Dave Lifton. First of all, that guy on that cover looks young.
Was there
Well, in 1971, I was only in my 50s.
Was there a face on that cover or just pants with a fly open?
Just pants with a fly open.
Oh, okay. So there was no head to recognize anybody as to who it could be emerging through the zippered door.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay.
I think that is the name of a band, Emerging Through the Zippered Door.
You know, that would be a great name for a band.
Really?
Put one together out there on Long Island.
I picture it to be like a mixture of Winger and Dream Theater.
They could play Klezmer.
Klezmer.
Cock Rock Prague. Cock Prague.
Yiddish.
If it was a Jewish band, it would be Cut Schlong.
Were you ever in a band growing up? Were you ever like in a band when you were a kid?
Grandma gave me drum lessons, clarinet lessons.
She gave you drum lessons?
No, she didn't give it to me.
Because that would be awesome.
I know. Getting banged by your mom. No, that wasn't it. No, she arranged for drum lessons, clarinet lessons. My mother wanted me to be musically talented in some way. She had a very pleasant voice. My wife and I cannot figure out where Jason and his brother Ryan get their musical talent from, because it certainly is not from us, or their passion for music, which is just so unbelievable. It just blows me away. But every instrument I took, I absolutely failed at. I had no sense of rhythm, no dexterity. I was just horrible, and it frustrated me for the longest time.
Jeff is relearning guitar.
Really?
Really?
I wouldn't say relearning.
What would you say?
Fumbling learning? Around.
He bought one.
No, I've had one. I've had one for, probably 15 years, and I just have never really bothered with it.
How's that coming along?
It's fun.
Are you doing it normally? Like regularly, rather?
Yeah, I pick it up for, half an hour.
A day?
I try to do it every day.
That's great.
I'm not quite doing it every day, but...
Are you a better guitar player than your son is a harmonica player?
Yeah, I've had the harmonica for about 20 years, and that's another instrument that I put down out of frustration because I couldn't hack it, and let my son play with it early in the morning one day, which was a bad mistake, and... That's been a consistent source of amusement for Dave. That picture that I took a picture of him wearing shades and playing harmonica. That was for you, Dave.
Yeah. what did I say? He looks like the bassist of New Hampshire's only blues band or something.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember the Ed Sullivan Show?
Yeah.
Are you kidding? I gave him his start.
Oh, okay.
Dave was a gaffer.
Now, do you remember? Here's trivia for you. Do you remember the name of the harmonica group that used to appear? One of the guys was a midget.
Yes, the Rats.
No.
The Rats.
No, do you guys remember that?
No.
They were a comedy group. They played harmonica, and they were marvelous. Harmonicats.
The what?
The Harmonicats. Look it up. See if I'm right on that one, Jason. Look it up on Tweet. Look that up. Skype it.
Find out how many megapixels they have.
Is it there?
Jerry Murad's Harmonicats.
Yeah. They were... The harmonica, to me, is one of the most underrated musical instruments.
Jeff will agree with you on that one, right?
I love the harmonica.
You know the story with Jason with his band in high school, don't you?
I don't know what story that is.
Jason, when they had Battle of the Bands, Jason didn't so much go out to win as he went out to involve all of his friends on that stage. And so we went to the show. I have a T-shirt inside. What was the name of that your band?
The Rats.
The Rats.
What was it?
Chaos Pie.
Chaos Pie.
Chaos. What the fuck are you laughing at? That's a great band name.
Well, listen,
It's one of her friends, Jason's mom.
Yes. One of her favorite positions.
No.
Chaos Pie.
Actually, Dave, you should know Chaos Pie. We got the name because it was a dessert that you could eat at the Ground Round.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, okay. I don't remember that. I wasn't allowed to have dessert.
Well, he wasn't allowed to name it Hair Pie.
So you're making
either.
Up for that now, then.
Yeah.
Hair Pie.
We were going to name it Hair Pie, H-A-R-E, but we thought that might get banned.
This one goes out to all our hipster fans. Thank you for listening to Popo's, you suckers, now fuck off.
So, Jason, where do you think you did, if neither of your parents were musical, where did you get your ability from?
I have no idea. I don't know. I
think we shared determination.
I don't know where I got my musical interest or talent from. I don't know. Dave, your parents are musical, right?
My mom is.
Yeah.
You should know that.
She's a whiz with a glockenspiel.
No, that's more wailing. I don't know if that's singing.
No, my mother was and still does a little bit of singing. She did always had a very good voice. Her father was very musical. And that got that ability got passed down to me, and I guess from my father I got the kind of obsessive personality. Obsessing over your hobbies and always needing to know every single thing about something from him. So it's kind of a perfect storm of music geekdom.
And you were part of your father's organ grinder act for a while.
Dave was the monkey holding the pencils. So Dave, your parents turned you on to musicals.
Yes.
Dave, Jeff, what about you?
What did my parents turn me on to?
Yeah.
Drugs.
No, that's what my kids turned me on to. Their vinyl collection was full of... I was born in 74, so most of what they had was kind of like the 70s greatest hits stuff. You know, we had the Eagles' greatest hits. We had Asia, you know, Steely Dan's record.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of Elton John. There was a lot of Billy Joel. There was some Beatles. I was forbidden to play those records when I was young because all we had was one of those little Fisher-Price record players.
Ah, I had that.
Yeah, and my mother claimed that it would ruin the vinyl.
I can see that being a viable excuse.
So I had to, like, sneak them out, and then finally they bought me a record player for, like, my, I don't know, 9th or 10th birthday. But my parents were both, when I was growing up, my parents were both really, they tried to be contemporary. You know, they would get those. Do you remember those gold and platinum collections that they used to put out on tape?
Yeah, I remember those.
Yeah, we have those. And so
tape or record? Like Dynagroove, RCA Dynagroove, Red Label Records.
These would be cassette tapes.
Oh, cassette. I remember them.
Although I do remember 8-tracks.
Oh, yeah, I remember 8-track as well.
When we moved to California from New Jersey, I think I listened to Barry Manilow's live album about 100 times. The one where on the cover he's wearing like a blue unitard. Do you guys remember
that? Yep,
right.
I remember
that. Oh, yeah. Of course, I'm a Long Island Jew.
Yeah, so it was top 40 stuff. That was when my parents... There was no secret gateway to, you know, hip music. It was just all top 40 stuff.
Right.
See, I wonder, here's what I think about Jeff, because I think you're, you know, I marvel all the time at the way that you bring music to your kids. You know.
Well, thank you.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's really impressive. I mean, I was at your house a couple of weeks ago, and your daughter eagerly sat down with us to watch the Bela Fleck documentary.
That's right.
So what I think about, Jeff, is when your kids get older, what they will say about how they were brought up with music.
We had to watch this goddamn bit.
Well, no, because, I mean, because, like, you know, Jeff, you say, you know, there was no gateway to hip music or whatever. Yeah. And certainly the music that I was listening to when I was a kid from my parents was John Denver and Starland Vocal Band and Barry Manilow and Neil Diamond. And
the Wee Five. I love the Wee Five.
There you go. So, I mean, that stuff was not cool. Like, you guys weren't into the Stones or the Who you guys, mom had a couple of the early Beatles records, a couple of the early Monkees records, but like nothing, you know, nothing really that was cool.
No, mom used to drop acid and listen to the Monkees.
That's not, I don't believe that is true. I think you're making that up right on the spot.
You can hear Jason starting to freak out.
That's not true. I'm like Luke Skywalker right now when he found out Darth Vader was his father. I'm like, no. So I don't know. I mean, your kid, but also my parents didn't have me listen to kids' music, and you have your kids listen to kids' music. Now it's not like Raffy or, you know.
Oh, wait a second. There was no Raffy when you were a kid, but there was the Muppets, which we watched as a family constantly.
Is that kids? I mean, Sesame Street's kids' music. Would you call the Muppets and kids' music?
And Sesame Street?
Sesame Street, I would.
But even I think back then, Sesame Street, that music is really hip.
Yeah.
Those songs are really well written.
Yeah, and they had hip artists doing them.
But you've
them.
Got stuff like C is for Cookie and Everybody Makes Mistakes and songs like that. Those are, you know, those are definitely for kids, regardless of how.
But take them apart musically.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Everybody Makes Mistakes. Is that the song that your mom and I sing about you and your brother?
Very good. Well done. Well done. But the music, okay, so if I did listen to kids' music, it was very much, I don't know, I don't know if it was talking down to kids, but it wasn't intelligent music for anybody over that age. Whereas, what Jeff deals with a lot is what they call kindy music, which are like independent artists.
Does Jeff make his kids listen to that Disney station on satellite?
No, that's the thing. His kids listen to really intelligent, both adult and kid music.
Like rap?
Like the Rats.
Rap.
Like Harmonicat.
You know, like the guy with the one tooth?
No, he doesn't listen to
Nickel. What's 50 cents, 25 cents? What's his, who's that guy?
It's Nickel.
Nickel. Okay.
MC Nickel.
Now, I liked MC Hammer. I love the pants. I'd love to get a pair of those pants.
I'm sure you could very easily.
Pretty sure you own a pair of those pants.
But see, you forget, Jason, that you grew up in an adult world because of what you were doing when you were younger, and so did your brother.
Turning tricks for money?
Masturbating? balancing the budget? Doing my taxes?
Because you were doing acting. Theater and acting and TV commercials.
That was more Ryan than I was. He grew up more
but
as
you,
like
you guys grew
kid.
Up, and everywhere we went, we took you, and you were always surrounded by adults. In fact, none of the kids in the neighborhood liked you. Except for Greg Louganis. But you're right, we didn't fill our kids' worlds with children's music.
Well, but Jeff has, but in a really intelligent way. So I'm just curious when his kids get older, whether they're going to be like, yeah, we always listen to cool music. I just wonder what their trajectory will be like, what they'll wind up listening to when they're older, and if they'll be like, you know, whether they'll be, I don't know, happy with what they grew up with. I'm sure they will be.
But I think by the time that Jeff's kids are older, there's not going to be a music industry for them to listen to. And that's what we have to worry about.
And Jeff will have drunk himself to death.
That's right.
All it'll take is one more trip to New York.
Well, he'll drink himself to death, and then his kids will inherit his albums. So that ends that.
Jeff, the most important thing to teach your kids as they grow up
is how to
push a wheelchair.
Down a flight of stairs.
Jeff, will you put them in music lessons? Will you encourage them to play instruments?
Oh, I'll encourage them. That's why they both have ukuleles.
Really? I think that's great.
Yeah, I'm just trying. I don't want to be, I want to let them come to it on their own. I don't want to force Sophie to practice ukulele.
I respect you for that, because I feel like when I become a dad, I am going to have a hard time not pushing music, any of that stuff. This is what I was talking about before. This is another thing about your balance with your kids that I find very interesting and impressive, is because I feel like when I'm a dad, I will have a hard time not pushing music on my kids, being like, hey, you know, almost being like, listen to this, you know? You just kind of, you always have music on.
Well, it's because of what I do.
Right.
Do you have a, did your kids have a little keyboard in the house?
No. They just have, they each have a ukulele. My son's ukulele is more of a beater because of who he is.
Right.
my daughter's is nicer, and I actually tune it. And, you know, they see me practicing guitar, and it's like Jason says, it's always around, but I don't want to be heavy-handed about it yet. I mean, she's only five.
Yeah, she better shape up by the time she's six or seven or so.
But I've heard her, she knows a couple of chords.
Yeah.
She was like, yeah. I think she said to me, this is an F7 or something like that.
Well, look.
No, it was an FU chord.
Ah.
And now it's time for the endorsement section of the podcast, where each of us recommends something that has been on our mind lately. And we are going to start with our guest of honor, Gary Hare. What is your endorsement?
The fine Multimaster power tool. It allows you to cut into corners of wood and notch things. You can cut metal, ceramic tile. You can power sand. And it is probably one of the best power tools I've ever had.
Because I said to him yesterday, I'm like, you need to like, I was like, you need to think of like some, like a movie or some music or something. He goes, oh fuck.
Okay, you porn. The only thing you have to remember with you porn is you have to clear the history. Well, wait a second. Where else can young people get TV time except for you porn?
What?
They get screen time. All these young teenagers and, uh-huh. and the old people, they get to be on TV because of you porn.
Oh, I see what you mean. How do they get
exposure? Commercial.
You could
do your
I'm good.
The whatchamacallit. The
whatever it is you're about what to say, you, I'm good.
Burger King, what was the thing you did?
I don't know. Why are you making a motion like you're jerking off?
No.
I don't know. You're
Burger King.
Did you get arrested for jerking off at Burger King?
No. Wait,
it's called a latte.
What are you talking about?
You know, your stovetop stuffing commercial.
Oh, right.
You could be on your porn and have braces and no one cares.
There you go, my dad endorsing power tools and internet pornography.
How much does the power tool cost?
I think it's about, well, a bunch of, Rockwell makes one that's about 117. The fine Multimaster is about $380, but it's just absolutely phenomenal.
Well, that'll go over well with our audience.
Comes in a kit, and it's wonderful.
The fine Multimaster tool, we'll have to find a link to that.
F-E-I-N. I'm a What are you guys endorsing?
All right. I'm going to endorse the ESPN book, the oral history of ESPN. Those guys have all the fun. Are you laughing because I said oral history?
Oh, yeah, because of what you said on Twitter.
Oh, how I love a good oral history, like the one that I share with your mother?
Right.
Jason's dad is the one who's laughing.
That's okay. Right. I just wrote a letter to the people who are building my house. They were putting up the panels. And I wrote them that I was coming up because there was going to be a big erection. And it went all over the office at Lincoln Logs, I think.
Dave, you've read this book, right?
No. I got the press release on it, and I sent it to the PopDose script to see who wanted it because I can't read.
What?
I do very little reading because I'm on the computer and I'm, you know, reading so much on the internet that, like, books I have 15, 20 books that I've bought in the past few years that have just never been touched. And so I didn't want to have to read yet another book with the hope of trying to write a review. I don't write good book reviews. I've never been really happy with the stuff I've done in that regard. So I just said, you know, I'd really like to read this book, but I just know that I'm not going to be able to do it.
Well, you should read it. I think you'd like it. You watch ESPN a lot more than I do, I'm sure.
Not as much as I used to. Just when there's a game on, I really don't care about SportsCenter or the personalities and all that shit. But
the book is massive. It's over 700 pages, but right. It's an oral history, so it's a quick read.
That's by Shales, right?
Yeah, Shales and his partner. I forget the other guy's name.
I can't remember it either, but they also did the SNL book, the Saturday Night Live book, a couple of years ago, right? I love that. I really enjoy that style of book, and I feel like I probably even find this interesting even though I have never watched ESPN.
Yeah, you probably would. I think that's the magic of the oral history.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, do you like the Brian Gumbel thing on cable TV where he goes, they go into, I forget what it's called.
Real Sports? No, Real Sports?
Real Sports, yeah. I
don't have HBO.
Oh, see, I hate sports. Well, I like things like kayaking and others and snowboarding.
Well, when you were a younger man, didn't you sell pencils at Yankee Stadium or something like that?
How'd you know that story?
Because you told me.
Oh, I sold, I worked for Harry M. Stevens, and I sold Coca-Cola, peanuts, ice cream. I sold coffee in the upper bleachers, but I was so short that the spout for the coffee urn you wore on your back, it used to drip into my sock. It was an amazing experience. I actually made more money at a doubleheader because I hated sports and I didn't watch it. I brought home more money in a weekend than my father made the whole week.
Jeff's mom makes a lot of money at doubleheaders. <That's right.
laughs> So what's a cool story that you've got from the book so far?
My period for watching SportsCenter was the Olbermann Patrick era.
Oh, they're not. They don't treat Olbermann well in that book, do they?
Well, no, he's an asshole.
Right?
Is that a shock?
No. That's what I wanted to get to. Like that whole story of, you know, his tenure at the network, and I didn't watch it in the mid-90s, so I didn't know that he had been briefly shunted over to ESPN2 and made to wear Hawaiian shirts and leather jackets. During their version of SportsCenter, which I guess they called Sports Night. So those are probably my favorites. But it's all really interesting. From the beginning, where it was just some guy and his son that bought some land in muddy old Bristol, Connecticut, and borrowed some money from Getty Oil to start this little network that nobody thought was going to amount to anything, to now, when they're huge.
Well, they call me Sweetness, and I like to dance. Running the ball is like Mickey Mantle. We had the goal since training camp to give Chicago a Super Bowl champ. And we're not doing this because we're greedy. The Bears are doing it to feed the needy. We didn't come here to look for trouble. We just come here to do the Super Bowl shop.
Okay, Jason, what have you got?
I think I'm going to endorse the that Waylon Jennings album. That Jeff.
Oh boy! Out come the knives from Dave.
I know, Jeff.
You miss. Well, Jason, describe it, and then I'll give you what I had said about it.
Okay. So, and actually, Dad, I got to make a copy of this album for you because I think you're really.
He's like 80, isn't he?
Huh?
Waylon Jennings.
No, not Waylon Jennings. And Dave's going to talk about that in a minute, I'm sure. But no, it's a group called the Waylon Jennings.
Oh. Okay.
They're from Canada. They're a 3-piece folk trio. Jeff had emailed me one day and asked if I'd heard the album and said, I really think you're going to like it. And he was absolutely right.
Jeff's awfully opinionated for basically a guy who's a shut-in and just sits on a computer all day.
I know my heterosexual life partner.
That's right. That's me. The Waylon Jennings are... Yeah. So they're a Canadian folk trio, and Their music is just beautiful. It all sounds a little similar, and it's nothing is going to be like kind of pump your fist. But, no. You know, I was thinking about this on my way over here to record today, which is that the harmonies that I like the best are the ones where you really can't tell who's singing what, and that you know there are a lot of distinct, thoughtful parts, but you can't exactly make out what they are unless you listen repeatedly, and then things start to poke out that you didn't see before. This is like a very Beach Boys quality. Not that they're the Beach Boys, but their harmonies are very inventive and creative. And I just think it's a beautiful, beautiful record. It's called Bright Morning Stars.
No, I agree with you that it's a beautiful record, and that their harmonies are gorgeous and their songs are pretty good. My issue was that for a band that is using that name to draw on the name of Waylon Jennings, that I wanted, I was expecting something more like a band like Those Darlings, who are just raw and ragged, and you know I refer to them as you know, I like to think of them as the members of the Carter family that they gave up trying to save. You know, I wanted something with more sass and more attitude and a little bit more sexuality in there. Just, you know, just something like that. If you're going to use that name, that was my issue with that.
See, that's interesting because, well, I had never said the name aloud. I didn't put it together.
Yeah, same here.
I didn't put the connection together until you mentioned it on Twitter that you know, it was kind of like it sounded like Waylon Jennings. I didn't even think of it. So I treated it in, you know, the way just basing it on the music itself. So you like the music. You just, if they had a different name, you would like it better.
Right.
It's kind of lame.
Absolutely.
So, Dave, what do you have to endorse?
I'd like to endorse a band called The Rats.
Well done.
I preferred Chaos Pie.
Yeah. Well, they're opening for them. No, my endorsement is not a product. It is a thing. For the past month or so, I've been spending a lot of time at the – and it kind of goes back to some of the things that we've been talking about today. Venerable institution here in Chicago called the Old Town School of Folk Music. And every Thursday night, they have an open jam with everybody brings their acoustic guitars, banjos, mandolins, violins for, you know, 3.5 hours. And somebody will call out something like Jambalaya or I'll Fly Away or Worried Man. These, you know, these wonderful old songs that have no more than 4 chords. And, you know, we just do a quick run through, just teach people the chords and then just jam on it for, you know, 5 or 6 minutes or whatever. And that goes all night long. And I play guitar a lot at home, and I've been playing for 25 years or so. But I guess it's been about 15 years since I'd gotten together with friends, you know, like in the back rooms of the bars and the coffee shops where we used to play, you know, like after hours and stuff, and just go as long as we could. I had forgotten what that's like, that communal spirit that comes with just making music. I think it's even greater in this situation because it's people of all ages and backgrounds and skill levels. And I just come out of this thing feeling that all the stress of my week has been wiped away in time for me to enjoy the weekend. And you're probably asking now where I'm going with this. And what I'm going to recommend is the act of making music. You know, if you ever wanted to learn how to play an instrument but felt intimidated, or, you know, like Jeff said, he's learning how to play guitar again, and, you know, you got this thing in the corner that's just gathering dust because you weren't good at it, just get it going. And, you know, once you learn a D, G, and an A, you can find 50 great songs that aren't any more than that. And, you know, and look to see if there's, you know, like in your local community center or whatever, if there's a folk jam near you, and you'll kind of understand what I'm talking about. So, you know, just try to make music and don't care if you're any good at it. That to me is just an incredible feeling.
Well, that's a very nice endorsement. I like that
that's
very
the kind
much.
Of thing I hear that a lot these days from kids musicians. The woman that I bought Sophie's ukulele from is actually, you know who she is because she was on Seinfeld.
Heidi Swedberg,
very good. She says that with a lot of other instruments like the guitar, people have baggage because either they just couldn't cut it at all, or you know, they didn't make band tryouts. You know, there's something in their past, and there's there are serious expectations attached to them. But the ukulele, she says, gives you a license to be silly, and yeah. It makes it easier for somebody to just pick up and play after you know an hour or 90 minutes or whatever. But that's a refrain that I'm hearing.
Yeah, and pretty much like anywhere you put your fingers is a chord, and it'll just kind of sound right because I guess the notes are so close together and so similarly pitched. Yeah,
but it's kind of this I think it's kind of a reaction to the American Idol generation, this kind of pervasive notion that music is about competition, or about being a star, or about being awesome, and instead of just the spirit that you're talking about.
Yeah. And I had been kind of wary about this because, you know, I'm kind of like been in the past 5 or 6 years been going back and discovering a lot of this older music. And, you know, we throw in some rock and roll songs. One guy, one of the leader of the later session, he's like referred to me as his Dylan guy. You know, so when like, you know, so we'll like teach them all something like You Ain't Going Nowhere. You know, which anybody can sing along with and play along with. It's very simple, and it just works in a lot of ways, and I just find it a lot of fun.
You do that too sometimes, don't you, Jason?
Occasionally. I was going to say this is something that I like about New York City, is that, you know, my musical partner, Mike, often in the summer will spend as many nights as he can going down to Washington Square Park where a bunch of musicians get together, and I think there are different levels of communality. Community? Is that a word? Is communality a word?
Sure, why not?
Why not?
It is now.
We're being in the folk tradition. It's all...
Okay, all right, yeah. I mean, there are some groups that will meet at Washington Square Park that are a little bit more exclusive, but there are a lot that are inclusive where people can just bring their guitars, and you'll get people of varying qualities. I mean, like, I know it, like, if you go to the Bagot Inn in the city, like, on Wednesday nights, there's a good chance that
Bagot Inn, that's what I did to your mom last night.
Bagot. I knew something was coming. I thought it was going to go in the faggot direction. But, like, when they're in the city, Chris Thiele is in the city, because he lives in the city of Brooklyn, he'll be there leading a bluegrass jam. And you got to have some guts to get up there, but I don't think they would turn anybody necessarily away. But New York is very good for that. I'm glad that people are doing it. I'm glad that people are looking at the ukulele now. I think, you know, obviously Eddie Vedder's had a little bit to do with that recently. and I think the uke has been on, I think someone played it on American Idol. I don't know. There was an article in Rolling Stone I was reading about it. But as long as people are getting out and playing music.
Well, you pump yarn and shiny shoes and wear your hair just right. You go down on cruising strip because you want to score tonight. You don't got enough time to stun, you really want to show your scars. Forget all about that macho shit and learn how to play guitar.
And that's going to do it for this episode of the Pop Does Podcast. Thank you, Gary Hare, for being on the show today and for, almost as importantly, giving us the gift of Jason.
Jesus Christ, turn it off.
All right.
They were giving him a standing O.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, thanks, Dad.
I am standing. Okay. This whole experience is very humbling. And I'm really honored that you've invited me to this absolute waste of my time. it's really nice to know that, and I was honored because of Father's Day, and knowing that I was selected of all the fathers involved, because I still have a pulse. So that's really a big honor.
Default, don't turn down default, Dad.
Don't turn down default, that's right.
Well, also don't forget, Jeff is a father. You know, he has kids, and I probably have some kids somewhere.
Somewhere.
You can find back episodes of the show on iTunes, and while you're there, please leave us a review because it helps give the show greater exposure. Follow us on Twitter at Popdose, and we'll be back with another show next month. And guys, we've got, at this time next month, my mom will be in town. What do you think about having her on the show?
Let's do it.
You want to get all the moms together. Are they all alive? Are all the moms still alive?
Yes.
Yes.
Last time I checked. Yeah.
Well, no, Jeff, your mom is very much alive.
Well, all the venereal disease bound to catch up at some point.
Well, at least from the neck up, she's alive. That's, you know, that's the if you get all the mothers on, you'll have a whole 5 minutes of felling. So they can tell about their kids.
Yeah, let's have your mom on, Dave. Let's do it.
Mom can talk. Mom can talk about your birth. I get the pictures as you emerged into this world.
We'll see about that. I'll see if we can.
That's great. I'm gonna go and be sick.
All right. Have a good night, everybody.
All right. Take it easy. Thanks. Hey, Dad. Thanks again.
Thanks.
Yes. Thank you.
What did I do?
Just, you showed up.
Oh, okay.
It's like your parenting. You showed up.
Okay. That's it.
Bye, everybody.
I owe you all a drink.
I get those chords a
lot. Well, look at Judy Tenuta. Judy Tenuta goes out to perform.
I'd rather not.
Yeah, but I mean, to me, when you're older, an older guy, there's nothing like a woman playing an accordion or a ukulele to get me wet. I mean, I think that is just such a turn on.
This is the greatest show ever.
I think if you're getting wet, that's probably the beginning of the problems, and that's probably why you're interested in Judy Tenuta.
When that happens, I know I didn't wear my Depends that day. Trust me. Or my wings, when those things are, those little boxes.
I've never heard anybody describe the accordion as a turn on.